Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon. This week, we'll answer a listener's question about where dinosaurs come from and learn what babies' drool can tell us about their mental state. But first, in nature, eggs are sitting ducks. But as reporter Chelsea Wald tells us, some types of eggs may not be as helpless as they seem.
It's hard to imagine your breakfast egg running away from a predator, but the eggs of the red-eyed tree frog can do just that. Biologist Karen Workington of Boston University has found that these eggs hatch prematurely when in imminent danger from a snake.
And it's a very rapid behavioral response. Snake starts biting, and within seconds to a couple of minutes, the tadpoles will bail out, and about up to 80% or so can escape from the snakes.
But premature tadpoles don't face good odds, so they need to be able to tell a real snake from a false alarm.
It's such a big decision for them, and it's a question of, you know, death in one place versus death in another place.
Their secret? Workington's experiments show that the eggs use vibrations to distinguish between snakes, wasps, rain, and wind, and are accurate even when the vibrations are similar.
Thanks, Chelsea. Well, one thing that can stress a relationship is incessant screaming, crying, and demanding. No, we're not talking about your spouse, but your baby. And as tough as it is for you to listen to, it's even tougher being an infant. Could that crying mean your baby is suffering from debilitating stress? Well, now you can find out with a simple drool test. It measures levels of alpha amylase, a digestive enzyme found in saliva. Increases in the enzyme have been linked to stress in adults. Now, a team led by Doug Granger, director of the Behavioral Endocrinology Lab at Penn State University, found that babies also produce more of the enzyme in stressful situations. In older children, higher alpha amylase levels were linked to social problems, academic difficulties, and even physical illness.
And we are hoping that measures like this one will allow us to determine who is more resilient and who is more at risk of some of those negative consequences of stress.
And the ease of a saliva test could lead to new insights and earlier interventions for droolers of all ages. Well, it may seem obvious that good fortune makes us happy and tragedy makes us sad, but as reporter Justin Warner explains, what's obvious is not always correct.
It'll be a long time before cities like New Orleans and Biloxi fully recover from Hurricane Katrina. Yet even in the battered Gulf states, self-reported happiness levels had generally returned to normal just 3 weeks after the storm. This may seem unbelievable, but it isn't to University of Michigan economics professor Miles Kimball. He says it's a classic example of hedonic adaptation.
This is something that psychologists have been studying a lot. So hedonic adaptation is just that in terms of people's emotions, people get over things, and they often get over things fairly quickly.
Kimball and his colleagues reported the Katrina findings earlier this year in a paper published by the National Bureau of Economic Research. Based on simple self-reports, they found that the national mood dipped for about 2 weeks after Katrina and for about 3 weeks in the hard-hit South Central region. That may sound trivial, but Kimball says those are actually big numbers.
Even fairly large things only affect people for a short time. So something that affects people for a couple weeks is actually quite large.
According to his research, that's because our day-to-day happiness is generally driven by very recent news. And he's found that global events, like the Pakistan earthquake, can affect us almost as strongly as more personal gains and losses.
You're watching people suffering on TV, and human beings are human beings, and so we respond to that. I think we may care more than we know about human beings on the other side of the world.
Kimball believes that by watching which kinds of events trigger a change in happiness and measuring the magnitude and duration of those dips and spikes, we can find out what we really value.
Thanks, Justin. Between the World Cup and the Tour de France, much of the world's attention is on Europe this summer. But in Philadelphia this very week, the U.S. is hosting an international event that's far more important. The World Congress of Soil Science. That's right, the science of dirt. Although it's nothing more than a fine film coating our planet, we rely on soil for almost all of our food. And a big focus of this conference will be preserving and enhancing soil to fight hunger. Every month, 200,000 people die in sub-Saharan Africa because they can't grow the food they need to survive. Worldwide, 5.5 million children die each year of malnutrition. Soil scientists meeting at the Congress are working on ways to manage soil and water resources to stem this disaster. Finally, in Jurassic Park, scientists resurrected dinosaurs from ancient DNA. But where did the original dinosaurs that actually roamed the Earth come from? Chelsea Wald answers this listener's question.
Recently, we got this call from listener Megan Salazar.
I live in Escondido, California, and I was wondering, how did dinosaurs get on Earth?
Well, Megan, paleontologist Jerry Harris of Dixie State College in Utah says that dinos got here the same way we and all living things did. They evolved.
Now, dinosaurs belong to a group of reptiles called archosaurs, which means ruling reptiles. And that's a group that today includes crocodiles, and believe it or not, birds are part of that group as well. But before the dinosaurs showed up, there were other kinds of archosaurs, ones which were not dinosaurs. And there were long, squat, armored things with little pig noses. And there were things that looked like upright crocodiles with tyrannosaur heads and, you know, small little lizard-like ones scurrying through the trees. Now, among this group are the things that were directly ancestral to dinosaurs. And these include little tiny, maybe crow-sized things that probably looked like giant kangaroo rats, very long limbs, running around snapping up insects and trying not to get eaten by their bigger cousins.
A modest origin for creatures that would come to rule the Earth.
And if you have a science question, remember to call us at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT or submit it on our website, www.scienceupdate.com. If we use it in the podcast, you'll win a priceless, and by that we mean free, Science Update mug. Next week, we'll look at how rough roads may be making a huge dent in your wallet and a new robot that could help soldiers on patrol locate snipers. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.